Before we get into today's episode, I want to share a quick note. This episode is part of a series I'm calling The Episodes That Built My Practice. What started as simple conversations, really coffee chats, with professionals across the industry turned into something much more impactful than I ever expected. These are the people taking time out of their day to share their stories, their experiences, and how they navigated their careers. And over time, those conversations started to shape how I think. They helped me build confidence, work through imposter syndrome, and better understand what it really takes to grow in this profession, and eventually to start my own practice. So I'm bringing back the episodes that had the biggest impact on me, 25 episodes, because sometimes one conversation can change how you see your entire career path. And I hope these do the same for you. I hope you enjoy listening to the 25 episodes that really shaped and built my career. And in the show notes below, I'm going to start off the show notes with the impactful lesson I learned from this individual. So don't forget to check out the show notes to see what the lesson was before you listen to this story. Hello, and welcome to the Mentor Dino YouTube channel. I'm your host, Caitlin Rosier. I am an architect and founder of Mentor Dino. Each week, I interview amazing professionals in and around the architecture, engineering, and construction industry to help foster learning, growth, and inspiration in others. Thank you all to our current subscribers, and if you're new, we'd love to have you join our community. So hit subscribe, it really does help others be able to discover this resource. So let's dive in. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome to the Mentor Dino podcast. I would like to welcome Tara Peckler, Specification Sales at LaFace McGovern Associates in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Thank you so much, Tara, for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks for having me, Caitlin.
So I always start out with kind of the bigger introduction question to kind of give everybody a sense of your background and how you got to where you are today working at LaFace. Do you mind kind of going through your education background and kind of your journey so far in your career?
Sure, definitely. Well, like many design professionals out there, the path I started on is not the path I am currently on, but it has lots of ties in to where I started. So I got my undergraduate at the University of Pittsburgh. I then went on to do my master's work at Chatham University here in Pittsburgh. And I left Chatham with a Master of Arts in Interior Architecture through their Interior Architecture program. And I went out into the world, you know, expecting to do what I had set out to do, which was practice commercial design within, you know, an architectural firm. And I started onto that path, worked locally for both large and small firms in the Pittsburgh market, started to gain, you know, some experience, within that piece of the architectural community. And then I was derailed unexpectedly. So a dear friend of mine owned a lighting showroom, and she just needed some help. You know, a few hours a week, hey, can you jump in? You're qualified to do this. And I thought, this is great. I'll learn a little bit about lighting and stay on my path. Well, I fell in love with lighting. And so that began my my trek into the lighting niche of architectural design. And I really haven't looked back since then. And so the very interesting part about that experience was it was a traditional lighting showroom, which doesn't exist as much in today's current era. The showroom model has started to die. It's a bit of a dinosaur. No pun intended to our podcast here.
Yeah. Hey, I have fun. If I can roll him into anything, I do.
That's right. That's right. But the great part about it was the group that I was working with, most of our business was centered around historic restoration and repair work. So basically going into, you know, some of those vintage properties around the city, finding the original gas or electric lighting fixtures that existed within those spaces, completely rehabbing those back and electrifying them. so that they could be rehung in their original environments. That was where I really started to understand and fine tune the love of materials and, you know, the engineering behind a light, what makes a light, following the journey from, you know, what were we using as a population whenever we were dealing with, you know, fire, gas lighting, and how that's evolved into the electric era. And of course, now into the LED era. And so that's where my love of lighting really started to take root. I was given an opportunity to join LaFace and McGovern about 6 years ago, and it really was the right fit at the right time. I never really saw myself on the rep side of the industry, that it just didn't fit into what I thought my story was. But I really, really love the idea of being able to work hands-on with, you know, the architects, interior designers, electrical engineers, lighting designers of our area, to start to bring projects to life. And so I took the leap into the rep side of our business and have been doing that for the last 6 years, happily.
How long were you working part-time at your friend's business before jumping in?
Absolutely. Not very long, actually. It coincided beautifully with the financial crash of 2008-2009. So I was holding on as an entry-level human, you know, my salary was lower, so I was staying aboard. But I knew that, you know, that was a pause that I had to take while our industry was trying to recover, you know, and come up for air. And so I did. I made that switch over to full time with the lighting showroom whenever kind of the industry said I needed to. And I figured it would be a quick stop, you know. And I was actually with that business for about 8 years. So it was not a quick stop.
No. But you have to react too to what's going on around you. Like, you didn't control the economic crisis that was going on. So sometimes other forces force you to pivot into something you love.
Oh, for sure. And I think staying flexible, for lack of a better term, flowing with whatever is happening around you within the industry is kind of critical. You know, I think when you start to put yourself into a box and say, this is how it's going to be and this is how I'm going to progress, the world tends to have a way of knocking you right out of that quickly.
Yeah.
So being flexible is always a great thing, especially, you know, when you're starting out and trying to find your legs.
Yeah. And then on that side, were you, like, I'm just fascinated that you were looking at, like, historical lighting and how that switches out, because there are so many old buildings in Pittsburgh and around the country. Was that company fabricating and, like, I think more taking a light off the wall and fixing the guts to keep kind of the outside, or either remaking the outside if it can't be reused again? Can you tell me a little bit more about that process?
Absolutely. And lighting restoration is still something that's done in, you know, our country. There's some pockets in Virginia that definitely have some fantastic, you know, lighting restoration specialists that are still at it. It's just like any other historic preservation or restoration industry, where, you know, you take what you have, you figure out what the condition of that particular piece is in, and then you just start layer by layer trying to figure out what can be saved, what can be rebuilt, what needs to be, you know, replaced. You know, we had an extensive network of reproduction glass shades, for instance, because so many times the brass bodies of those fixtures were in fantastic shape. And of course, with a little TLC and a lot of elbow grease on the wheel, you could
some love
really bring those back. But, you know, they probably have lost a number or all of their glass shades along the way. And so it was really just kind of figuring out what that particular piece needed. We would collaborate often with, you know, specialists within the area. I know we had a very interesting project with the the fixtures that are in the mayor's office. And of course, mm-hmm. those fixtures are full plaster, horsehair pieces. And, you know, we had started the restoration on those. One of them came down. And as soon as we started working on it, I mean, it just started crumbling. And so, you know, we reached out to Carnegie Museum, brought in specialists. Before we knew it, we were learning how to inject plaster to shore up the structure, you know, making casts, molding things, piecing back together. And they turned out fantastic in the end. But, you know, you really move on your feet when it comes to those type of pieces. Some of it's straightforward, you know exactly what you're going to get, and you always get a couple curveballs, but but there is nothing like it when it comes to those historic properties. If you can find those original pieces, you know, it just holds the whole character together, which is awesome.
Yeah, and you don't get that craft as much anymore.
You don't. You really don't. And I'm lucky at LaFace and McGovern. I mean, the majority of our very many lighting lines, we represent about 130 different lighting lines. The majority of them actually are, you know, American or North American made. And so I've had the opportunity to get into a lot of those lighting factories and really see what real-time manufacturing is these days on a modern fixture. And it is, it's funny. There's a lot of similarities. You know, it's not as far removed as you would think. The craftsmanship's a little different, but the principles are all there, which is cool.
And so on LaFace, you're more on the product rep side in terms of any architects listening. How is that role and job different than an architect or a designer, since you've kind of been on both sides?
You know, I thought I understood what a rep did whenever I entered into this world. And I was given a different education in a hurry. I can't speak to any other group of product representatives. I've never had any experience in anything other than lighting. But lighting, especially on the specification side of things, is it's equal parts artistic and technical every single day. You know, there's a lot of time spent interfacing and collaborating with, you know, our design community, trying to figure out what the solution is to whatever design is trying to come through and bubble to the surface. And then, of course, you know, I get to stay with a project the whole way through. So it's all the way into, you know, getting those calls to get down to the site. Installation is happening and we need to make an adjustment, you know, on the fly in real time, or, you know, there's a technical issue with color temperature, drivers, you know, something of that nature that needs to be addressed. So, yeah, I never know what's going to happen. Every day I wake up, I have a plan, and then I see how it turns out.
Now, are you just working on local projects, or do you have a territory or region you stick to?
Yeah. And this is very, within the lighting market, I'm sure this translates into other products also. You know, the country is broken into territories. And so then we can be your local representative for whatever that lighting factory is within the territory, you know, kind of boots on the ground for them. So if a product is being produced, say, in California, you know, it's much easier to have somebody right here in Western Pennsylvania for us to be able to, you know, get into your offices, meet to review things, talk through things, troubleshoot, whatever is needed. Our territory is Western Pennsylvania. And then LaFace also covers all of West Virginia. We have a West Virginia-based office. So we tend to throw a lot of projects back and forth with our West Virginia team. Mm-hmm. It may start in design up here and then, you know, is being built down there, vice versa. So we stay for Pittsburgh, we tend to stay very local. You know, most of the things that we're working on are more within our region. But we do tend to catch a lot of work that's being designed out of town. So we definitely do have to interface with, you know, architects, electrical engineers, lighting designers that are outside of the Western Pennsylvania market.
And what type of projects have you worked on?
Oh my gosh, name it. Caitlin. That's one of the fun parts about what I get to do is it's everything. I've had the opportunity to work on anything from, you know, healthcare related projects, K through 12 work, university work, all kinds of corporate office fit outs and commercial projects of that nature, hospitality, high end residential, multifamily. Oh gosh, the list goes on and on. It's really whatever, you know, music venues. There's always so much happening, and that's the fun part of what we get to do is we get to touch all these different kinds of projects, which is where I feel I become the biggest asset to my design community, is because lighting is so specific depending on what the type of project is. There's going to be different codes, different rules, different needs for a lighting fixture that's going into a behavioral health space as opposed mm-hmm. to an airport. And so, you know, knowing how to navigate those and what might be coming really, really is kind of the asset. I always love that whenever I get into a project, and especially with an architect or a designer that's just starting out, being able to start to have those conversations of, have you thought about mm-hmm. a fire rated housing in this application? Go ask that question. Like, you know, what kind of codes do we actually need to abide by here? It's great. It's that education in real time. And I can be that kind of conduit to help just make, you know, the specifiers around me just smarter. You know, you guys have to touch so many pieces of the puzzle that you have to have those people that are specialized in those industries to be able to fall back on and have those conversations with. And because you've got too many things, too many balls in the air.
Yeah. And I always tell young professionals that you'll never know everything, but it's finding the team that, regardless if they're a formal consultant or your local reps that just are seeing the same details, design, products every day, that you're the master of it. So it's leverage that knowledge and that connection. If you don't understand something and need to see it in person, then ask. Like, so many times you guys have samples that you can just bring in, take a look at for lights, really seeing how it washes a wall or seeing the fixture in person can be helpful when making decisions.
Yeah, so absolutely. And I think lighting is one of those interesting pieces. There are going to be times, if you're a young architect in a firm, there's going to be, of course, times where you're lucky to have a lighting designer on board, right? Either within your office itself or, you know, just as a consultant that's coming in on the project. And in those instances, I would suggest just beat their ears, like just try to figure out, why are they doing things? Why are these decisions being made? You know, what's the process that they're using to get to these final decisions? If, you know, that luxury isn't there on a project and you don't have one of those professionals in the room, you know, an LD really helping you out along the way, ask your reps, you know, have those conversations. It doesn't happen very often, but I absolutely love it when a young architect comes to me and is like, hey, can we schedule some time and just talk about downlights? Or can you, you know, come in and just show me how to go through a lighting submittal package. Those things I get so excited about, because typically, you know, as humans, we tend to shy away from those things that might show that we don't know. And so we just don't ask. But from where I sit, I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. Ask me, let's do it. And it is, it's just, you get to share that knowledge. You get to empower somebody to have a bit more of an understanding on whatever the piece of the puzzle is that they need to know at that point.
And I know probably the first 6 years of my career, I never had a lighting designer on my projects. It was all, you just had an electrical engineer. And then they're like, okay, architect, you go pick the specialty fixtures or other things. And they have the corridors and they can get that done. And you're like, crap, I'm not electrical. Like, what's going on? What type of temperature do I need to make sure it's consistent? How's the housing associated with it, depending on what the ceiling's doing or whatever the options. I definitely leverage my current lighting designer teams that I work with, because they're just so knowledgeable, but I understand that so many firms don't have that luxury, depending on if they have it in-house, if they don't get a consultant, or if the budget's just tight on a project and they can't afford it. So I know we've definitely done mock-ups on our own and trying to figure it out as not a lighting designer side. It's hard.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What do you find is the biggest challenge being a lighting rep?
There are far more hats than I expected to wear as a lighting rep. I, of course, because of my title, I, of course, expected that my time would be, you know, spent interfacing with my people, so to speak, you know, the, mm-hmm. you know, interior designers, landscape architects, you know, the creative minds of our community. And so I was surprised. And of course, this has just continued as I've matured in our industry. I was surprised at all the different people that, and, you know, parts of a project that I need to interface with on the daily. So, you know, for me, that then pulls from the traditional design team, of course, over to the electrical engineer. That's a big part of who we're working with, obviously, on the day-to-day. But then beyond that, it's the electrical contractors, the general contractors, the electrical distributors, because, you know, with lighting, our projects are being purchased by the electrical contractor. And so those contractors are purchasing through an electrical distributor, not through, you know, my company. Mm-hmm. And so understanding who those people are interfacing with them on the daily facilities, personnel, developers, the list goes on and on. There's a lot of different, you know, personalities that we get to interface with, and understanding who they are, where they fit, you know, who needs to collaborate. A lot of my position I have found is just bringing people together, you know, to talk through things. Hey, let's all get on a call together, you know, and actually meet each other and talk through what needs to happen in the next steps. So, you know, I kind of act as that conduit a lot of times of just kind of connecting these different parties and bringing them in together, because let's face it, whenever everybody's collaborating together, it all feels better. It all goes better.
Yeah. And just making sure everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And understands, you know, where things sit in the timelines and, you know, within project needs. So,
yeah. And you mentioned exterior and interior lighting. So besides the difference of being outside versus inside, are there different strategies that you typically educate when trying to light something from an exterior perspective versus interior?
Sure. That falls into the same bucket. Like I was saying before, what are the rules of the road, so to speak, if we were doing, an elementary school versus a swanky hotel lobby? I mean, there's different rules of the road, you know. Mm-hmm. When it comes to exterior fixtures, you know, the first thing you think about, of course, is performance. Is that thing engineered and built to withstand, you know, the elements it's going to be within? If we're doing a project right here in Pittsburgh, you know, we have a pretty brutal exterior for our fixtures to live in. There's a lot of, you know, expansion and contraction. There's a lot of salt. There's a lot of things that you want to keep in account. Salt for roads. Now, marine life, that's a whole different thing. You know, what color temperature do you need for a coastal area where there's turtles that you have to think about, right? You mm-hmm. need a warmer color temperature so that you're not getting in the way.
Turtles.
Right. Exactly. So those little baby turtles, when they hatch, are actually going to fall on the moon into the sea instead of the 3000K color temperature up here. So there's rules like that apply, of course. I like to think of exterior lighting. Well, it depends on the situation, right? exterior lighting, it's either more of a safety thing. Do we have the appropriate foot candles in the appropriate places to make sure that the people that are moving through the space are safe and secure? But then whenever you get into those situations where you're more in a residential hospitality restaurant type situation, that's more poetic lighting. You know, that is more trying to understand, how do you make this place feel like a place you want to linger in? And in those situations, for me, exterior lighting is lighting you cannot see. It is the all those hidden fixtures that are just accentuating architecture and, you know, just giving hints about what's happening around you. There's something about the subtlety of it that is nice, because when you're outside, you don't need the lumen output that you would need inside of a building, you know, because you're usually in a darker environment. And so your eye doesn't need quite as much to be comfortable.
Here's a weird question. When you're in a restaurant and they haven't programmed the lights properly, when they transition from like day dining to that like evening dining light, and they don't have it controlled quite right, how do you get pissed off when it's not done right? And it's just like, not to say that my husband used to work at Lutron and it drives him nuts every time that they don't have the controls set up right.
Really does.
That's where the context really comes in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, yes. We look at
the ceiling. If I see strobe lights and stuff right in the middle of where a feature wall would be, I'm like, why did you put that there? That's weird. Why? And so it's like, I get my own little things. I get excited when the bathroom's very well done at a restaurant and I go tell other people to go check out the bathroom. He gets really annoyed when the lighting controls don't operate right, or there's different color temperatures in the different like bulbs if they didn't change them out properly.
So we're getting further and further away from that in our LED world, but it is still something that gets to irk humans like me. Yes, the answer is yes. It absolutely is.
All the lighting is
frustrating. It is funny, though, because locally around town, like if something happens like that, I literally get home and just start like going through, you know, our database. I'm like, is this ours? Did we do this? You know, and then, of course,
is this our mess up? What's going on?
Is this our stuff? And of course, my thought is, if it's our stuff, we could fix it. Like, so,
yeah,
because LaFace has, we have an entire controls department within our purview. And I would recommend to any young professionals out there, if you're working with a lighting consultant, a lighting rep group who takes controls seriously and has the infrastructure to support the controls on a project is a partner you want to have. That is such a huge part. I mean, as your husband knows, I mean, that's such a huge part of the puzzle, the electrical puzzle, in today's world. And that's not going anywhere. That is just going to keep ramping up into the future. And so we do, we actually keep, we have three, master electricians on staff that only do commissioning work for our control systems. So when a project is completely installed, ready to go, you know, they're deployed to make sure all the programming is set, all the light levels are where they need to be. If there's color changing or scenes involved, that is all set for, you know, ownership to be able to live and work in their space. That becomes very vital also now that we're getting into like color tuning, and working with, you know, shifting of color temperature throughout the day. But having somebody locally for us is huge in those situations, because it's like you said, like if I'm out in the world and I see a problem, like I'm like, hey, Mike, listen, we're going to need to get you down to wherever because we need a tweak. And so having them right here locally is just, it's awesome, because we can just send them out, you know, quickly to be able to make things right, which is, that's it. It's the support the whole way through a project. It can't just be the support on the design end.
Yeah, and I find the controls are a lot like, As controls are to light fixtures, door hardware is to doors. So it can be very, very confusing to figure out how to specify it, how to make sure it's operated correctly. And it's all a bunch of numbers and letters, but the second it doesn't go right, you instantly know about it in the field. And then it's just like, and lights can be so, not customized, but there's so many different variations of it between direct, indirect. Everybody wants to be able to control the environment around them, especially when you get down to like office level. Or even my most recent MRI is all color tuning. And so participants can come in and fix and create whatever color scene they want. And so making sure everything transitions and moves and does everything as it's supposed to. Because when you click a button and it doesn't work, it's very obvious when it doesn't
work. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's so many reasons why that could be not working properly. Exactly. We know the big ones. We can get to the big ones really quick. But yeah, sometimes it's a puzzle and we need to stay with it.
Yeah.
To make sure we've got it.
Do you have any advice for architects or engineers that aren't specialists in lighting, but maybe have found they really enjoy lighting and want to go into being either a specialist in lighting or a rep or just focusing their design focus on it for projects?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would, you know what, if with whether it's lighting or any other piece of the architectural puzzle, if you're drawn to something, if something interests you and you just kind of get that energy from that particular piece of the architectural equation, go into, like, explore it, right? Explore it. I think that so many times I'll derail here. Hold on. Let me go back to your question. Yes. If people are interested in getting into lighting, of course, talk to your local reps. If you have local lighting designers, I mean, in Pittsburgh, we are like lacking in lighting design. It's a territory within our country that I don't think really understands the real value of, you know, a lighting designer. Of course, there's other markets that it's just, of course, that's someone on your team. Why would you not have one of these people with you? But, you know, seek them out and talk to them. Start to understand, you know, what projects they're working on and why they do what they do and how they got where they are. I know I've met lighting designers that come from all sorts of backgrounds, you know, not just, you know, through the Penn State AE program, which is an awesome way to become a lighting designer, by the way. But, you know, I know many interior designers that have, you know, gone deeper into that side of things. And so talk to the people around you, talk to your local reps, you know, start to pick their brains about what's available out there. And really, lighting is one of those things, like you said, Caitlin, if that's a focus of yours and that's something that you are willing to fine tune your understanding and education in, you will quickly become a specialist in that for your firm, especially if your firm doesn't have lighting designers on staff. You know, that's a way that you can really set yourself apart and, you know, add value to yourself as an individual, is by rooting into that. But there is, there's a yearly lighting trade show. It's called Legication, L-E-D-ication. Legication happens once a year in March in New York City. And it is probably, if you are seriously interested in lighting, that's a couple day hit. That's 48 hours of your life that you can really just dive all in. There are more, you know, CEU AIA courses than you could sit through. And it is basically every manufacturer from, you know, from our country, North America, the European markets that are, you know, that have a presence here in the States. They're all there. It's, you can talk lighting with everybody around you for hours and hours on end. It's a great experience. So I would say, you know, if somebody's really serious, that would be a great place for them to go to make connections within the industry, to see what's out there. you know, to try to figure out what part of the lighting world they jive with best.
I know you said you tested out lighting and fell in love with it. Was there a particular piece or moment that you found like, oh, this is for me?
Oh, that's a hard one. You know, it's a running joke within our industry that once you get into lighting, you're not getting out. I thought it was this funny thing that was said locally. And then, you know, I realized that, no, this is a very national and I'm sure international thing. If you talk to anybody who's in the industry and has stayed in the industry, we all have very different stories on how we got here, but the same thing holds true, which is once you enter into this world, it is likely going to be where you're going to stay. And I don't know what that is. I don't know what kind of draw it has. Maybe it is because it is equal parts technical and artistic. You know, it does allow you to kind of really move both pieces of your brain, you know, and depending on which piece you like to move the most, you can dive right into that side of it.
Yeah, and focus on one thing versus another.
Right. Right. But it is. That's the running joke within our industry is like, once you get in, that's it. It's over.
There's so much you can do within as an architect, interior designer, engineer to specialize. And I run into a lot of young professionals that are like, how did people specialize in something? How do they know what direction to take? And a lot of the times you just stumble upon it.
That's funny. When I was working on my master's, I remember, you know, one of our professors who was a practicing architect had given that exact advice. You know, they were like, find the niche that works for you. Keep your eyes open for it. Like, you'll find it. It might be there. You know, don't keep yourself pigeonholed. And I remember sitting there in that classroom thinking, like, how the heck do you even do that? Like, what does that even mean?
Talking about?
Right. Like, yes, I understand what you're saying, but how do you even find that to know what it is? It'll find you in an odd way. It's like I said before, you have to pay attention in your early years. You have to try on a lot of things. You know, it's like young children, right? If you're a young parent, basically it's like you put your kids in all these different things, like try soccer, try gymnastics, try basketball, try basket weaving. I mean, like, just try all these things, try them all on, see what fits. And then they usually, you know, gravitate into something. It's kind of the same with our industry. You keep yourself open, try all sorts of things within your firm. You know, talk to all the different people that are doing all the different jobs in your firm. And you have to pay attention to what resonates. You know, you pay attention to, I like to, at the end of the day, it's like you think about, like, what were those moments during the day that, like, gave you the energy? Like, what were the things that you did during that day that, like, got you going, you know? And then you just try to do more of that kind of thing. And you usually lead yourself into a place you might not think you're going, but you're supposed to go there. So just keep following the breadcrumbs.
Yeah. And like we talked about initially, sometimes there's other forces that just happen. Yeah. You know, COVID forced people to realize things about themselves. The recession shifted people around. And sometimes you find your passion when something is a bigger force getting you to shift. Yes,
absolutely. And I think, you know, as humans, we're kind of wired to just kind of like get into the shell when those type of things happen. You know, you kind of just kind of prepare and lock in and just hold the line. And I think it's kind of the opposite. You know, hindsight, through some of the major external shifts that have happened over the course of my career, it actually, you know, you kind of have to look at it like, okay, things are about to shake up and I don't know how they're going to shake, but let's see where this spits us at the end. Yeah. You know, you have to be willing to see the good stuff that's happening within that crazy time and know that you might move somewhere you didn't mean to, but probably going to be the best thing for you whenever hindsight finally kicks in.
Yeah, that's great advice. Even going like design and construction, and so much goes with the economy. And so you never know. People get very worried when people talk about recessions are coming, and then young professionals just starting their career are like, oh my God, a recession's coming. And they think of 2008. I'm like, well, not all recessions are that extreme. But at the same time, if you're just living in fear of a recession and being let go, it can definitely be hard. But instead just saying, all right, things are going to shake up. What opportunities ahead of me, and what's going to happen? I think really pick up people's morale, even if, you know, change can be scary. But sometimes it leads to opportunities like you finding lighting and finding a whole new path that you are having a blast. Every time I see you come into our office, you are bubbling and super excited about everything. So you always bring a cheer.
That's because I get to work with you guys. It's fun. I'm a collaboration person though, you know, and so you got to know, it's like I said, you got to know what sparks you. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely going to be those personalities where the idea of as much collaboration as I do on the daily is like asphyxiating.
Too much.
Right. Yeah. It's like, that sounds like my nightmare. So you have to know what feeds you and what you're cut for, and lean into it. But, you know, somebody had given me the advice more recently, which I thought was really cool, is, you know, when you get to those points, because we all do that, like we'll all hit those burnout points where we're just running really, really hard. And, you know, we lose steam. We lose the energy to keep doing whatever it is that we're doing. And so the advice was, you know, you have to show up like it's your favorite thing in the world. You know what I mean? Like you have to kind of put that energy and that face into it. And it starts to turn it. It really does. You know, if you're always looking for the parts that are wrong with your career or your firm or the people that you're working with, you know, you're going to see it. You're going to see it and you're going to notice more and more of it. But if you're always looking for the things that are right, that do fuel you, the things people are doing that really are awesome, the things that your firm does that, you know, really support you and give you that, you know, safety net behind you as you're growing, you're going to see that. And so, and you're going to see more and more of that. So it's a momentum shift.
Yeah.
You know, you have to.
It's a mindset.
It is.
Yeah. When you're burnout, it can be very negative. And then you just start to spiral in just the negative thoughts all the time. And there is no perfect firm, perfect company, perfect project. It doesn't exist.
Nope. Don't try to find it.
Because you won't. And so every project will have its pros, cons, fun times, challenges. But definitely staying on the positive can help you at least get out of burnout if anybody is burned out right now.
Oh, for sure. I know that. Yeah. There's a few out there. I know it.
There's always,
because we all have to be in that place sometimes. You
know,
this is, our industry moves quickly. You know, it really does. It's not like we have an off season.
No, we're always on.
Always.
Yeah.
We're always creating something.
From an organization standpoint, has there been an organization that's left a really big impact on your journey, or an organization that's really impactful for lighting designers or lighting specialists?
Well, I would say lighting designer specifically, and me, of course, coming from where I come from, there is an organization called WILD, Women in Lighting Design. And we don't have a Pittsburgh chapter here, but there are some very active, very wonderful chapters around the country. That is a fantastic organization to just, you know, just meet like-minded people who are on those same career paths as you, if you're, you know, if you're a lighting design professional. Of course, I locally like to work with, you know, AIA in the architectural world, IIDA and ASID in the interior design world. And then of course, IES in the electrical engineering side of things. And it's just, those different organizations are just great groups to pull the pods of people and support them.
And very diverse, because you've got a little bit of the architects, the interior designers, the engineers, and then you're more specialist too. I always find sometimes architects, interiors, and engineers kind of stay in their lanes with organizations. Yes. And I feel like we need to cross collaborate more.
Oh, totally. If there was like more of a cross pollination thing, that would be
And get the owners fantastic. In there and just get everybody together, because that's how we are on projects. So
need
more of the bigger organizations to start collaborating with each other rather than having their own little siloed events.
Exactly. But. And I'm sure you agree. Those projects where you've got a team that's willing to just like come together and throw things back and forth. I mean, those are the projects that really, they get off the ground, they stay off the ground.
Yeah.
So.
And it's always the people. Like, I know you talked about discovering lighting. I discovered my passion's always the people side, regardless if it's the users or my team. And that's kind of how I started Mentor Dino, and just kind of discovering what I like about design and educating, mentoring. And it's like, okay, how can I do more of that and just hone in on it?
Exactly. That's it. Yep. Find the things. Find the things that give you energy and do more of it.
I always like wrapping up my podcast with this final question. And it's, what advice do you have for young professionals just starting their career?
Gosh, I feel like I gave some of this throughout the course of our chat. It's mindset. It really is. The energy you put out is the energy you're going to get back. I know that sounds like the way it sounds, but it's the truth, you know? If you feel that you need to make a change somewhere in how the day-to-day feels, start with you. Like, start with how you're coming at it, you know? That really does. That changes a lot. And also ask questions. Just ask questions. I know when, you know, when people start with us in an organization and, you know, they're in, we have a pretty intensive training program whenever, you know, folks start on with LaFace and McGovern. The big thing for me is, are those people continuing to just ask the questions? If somebody stops asking questions, that's like my red flag that something's going on. Are you okay? What's happening here? Just be curious, keep asking. And also don't feel intimidated to ask the questions that you might think you should know the answer to. Put yourself out there and, you know, ask for the guidance when you need it. Find the people that, that are going to be your allies in those different spaces and lean on them, you know, have those conversations, ask them those questions. More likely than not, they're going to be happy that you want to have that conversation with them. They're not going to be judgmental. You not knowing X, Y, Z. So,
I know. I know when I started, I was more scared to reach out to reps and be like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to know the information and they're just going to make fun of me that I don't know. Or just be like, well, you're just a kid and you just started out of school. What do you know? And it's just like,
exactly. I was the same way. You know, I was terrified that I wouldn't know enough to be able to have that conversation. And the exact opposite is true. You just go into it and say, I don't know about this. You got to start at the beginning. Start at the beginning with me.
And most of the time, especially if it's more of a rep, you've specialized in it. So you love the topic. So it can be very easy just to keep diving deeper and deeper and learning as much as you can.
And that's our job at the end of the day, is to be that resource for our local team. Yeah. That's what we're supposed to be doing with you guys.
And I would say mindset is huge. I know you kind of skimmed over it, but I have seen a lot of people over the years that once they just start the negative talk, it spirals and it goes down that path. And you can see it on team members, regardless if they're in-house or external. I've noticed it on people I have as consultants that I'm like, are they okay? Should I go ask another one of their coworkers? Cause they're just, when people are just so negative, it's like, well, what's going on? But the people that are so positive, even when big challenges or issues happen, those that are positive and are like, all right, how are we going to fix that?
That's
like, here's what we learned. and let's go about it. But the people that are like wanting to go at it so negatively, like I don't even want to work with them as much as the people who are like, okay, stuff happens. People make mistakes. What's the solution? Who do we need to call to help us figure it out? What did we learn from it so we don't make that mistake again? And just taking those as positive opportunities helps propel people and keep people in the profession. Whereas the ones that spin in negativity either leave in not mm-hmm. a specialist way like you did, but are more the negative, I hate architects, and leave. It can be detrimental to anybody's career. So I think mindset's absolutely huge.
It is. And, you know, it's a piece. We spend so much energy and time in this part of our lives. And I know we all know that, but it bleeds over, mm-hmm. right? So
affects life at home, affects driving sure. home, what road rage you have.
So I think that just generally speaking, no matter where you are in your career, and it's impossible to do that all the time, of course, you know, we're human, but if you are able to pause and just kind of reset and think like, all right, where is this coming from? And how can I change the trajectory of this energy? It is going to help things fall into place better. And that's where the cool connections are made, you know? So if, for instance, you know that, you know, the position you're in right now isn't quite the right fit, but you're not sure where the right fit is, chances are if you are coming at things with that type of that positive mindset, chances are you're going to make more connections with people out there in the world. You're going to network deeper in with people in the world. And so it's going to be easier for you to find, you know, the next stop in your career that could be the forever long-term stop.
Yeah. You know? And the more networks, you know, the more you get used to talking to people and can ask the questions, then you can start to learn more and see if there's a pivot or something else that you should look into that you didn't even know existed.
Mm-hmm. So. And let's face it. I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, in hindsight, some of the hardest experiences that I had as a very young professional, I am now at this stage of my career so thankful for. I am just so thankful that I had those experiences, that time, to learn that part of it, because it really does, it gives you good perspective. It makes you a little more resilient as a professional. And yeah, those parts of the journey are also well worth it.
Yeah.
Don't stay there too long.
Yeah. I will say my biggest challenges in my career have really defined who I am today. If anyone really enjoyed our conversation today and wanted to get a hold of you, is there a good way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, email is probably the easiest way. I'm sure you can link that in the show notes. It's tpackler, P-A-K-L-E-R. There's no C in there. @laface-mcgovern.com. That's the easiest way for sure. And yeah, anybody who needs anything, let me know.
Yep. I'll leave your email below. So if anybody wants to learn more about lighting design, even if you're not locally here in Pittsburgh, you can always reach out to Tara. So thank you so much, Tara, for taking the time to speak with me tonight. I know I had so much fun talking to you.
Thanks for having me. This is fun. This was my first podcast experience. So
first of many. We'll have to have you on again. Maybe we'll do something live and we'll play with lights somewhere. It'll be fun.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Let me
to be continued.
Yeah. I hope you enjoyed our discussion today. Check out the description below for any resources, links, and contact information we discussed. Did you like the conversation today? Is there something you'd like to know more about or a topic I should cover? Leave me a comment below and I will see what I can do to best answer your questions. And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the channel. It does really help others be able to find this resource to have larger conversations. So leave me a comment and subscribe. I really appreciate your support.